The following audio is from The Village Church. More information about The Village Church is available at www.thevillagechurch.net.
All right, welcome back. Glad to see you again. This week, we are going to continue our journey together talking about shared expectations. Last week, we talked about shared expectations with obedience, and we didn't quite finish. And so we're going to kind of pick up where we left off. We're kind of do things a little bit out of order from the way we've talked about it. We're going to finish a little bit on obedience this week, and then we're going to answer some questions. So, Carl, come back up. I think we've got five or six questions that you all emailed or texted in about obedience. So we'll tackle those here up front, and then we'll talk about responsibilities. So
I promised you that each week we would have a keeping it real parenting moment for you so that you would not love to hate the Wilkins. So this week's keeping it real parenting moment is brought to you by my mother-in-law, who is a wonderful woman, a wonderful woman. She's extremely clean. And she, we lived in Houston until 4 years ago. And so we did not have any family close by, because when you have four children really close together, you want to make sure that you're not easy to get to by any extended family. So no parents in town or anything. So we left town. I don't know why, probably because we were losing our minds and needed a break. And his parents came down to stay with the kids, and Stevie will clean my house the whole time she's there. She does everything, and I get home and the house looks better than it did when I left. And so we came back from our trip, and she said, "I have to tell you what the kids told me while you were gone." And at this point, the kids are like 5, 4, 3, and 1. She says, "I told the older kids, hey, why don't you go just strip the sheets off of your bed, and I'll wash them, and then we can put them all back on fresh." And my daughter, Mary Kate, who's actually here tonight, turned to my mother-in-law and said, "Oh, no, Nana, we only change the sheets when someone pees." I just want to throw in that at that point, people were peeing like every other day, so it wasn't that off. Okay, so we looked last week at what obedience looked like for that 9 to 24 month age range. And I know we kind of zinged through it quickly. I'll probably be referencing back to that a little bit as we quickly move through the 2 to 5 year bracket tonight, and then the older kids as well. I know we're not going to be possibly able to cover every scenario for you. It was kind of funny how many questions we ended up getting last week as soon as we hit the obedience thing, but that's good. If you have questions that aren't answered, or if you think we've said something completely moronic, please use kind words to express that and send us a question. So if you'll turn to the bottom of page 7 in your workbook, that's where these sort of bullets are of the things that we're going to cover. And I had put, when we put the book together, that we were going to cover responsibility for 2 to 5 years as the first bullet point there. And that was wacky. I shouldn't have put that, because we're actually going to devote a whole night to it this time. So I want to start with mealtime, just like we started with the infant, the toddlers, and talk about what mealtime looks like when you're in the 2 to 5 year range. I touched on last week about how children, it's good, it's your job as the parent to teach a child to eat what they're served. And really a good way to go about that is to not give them like a whole plate of stuff they hate, but to give them two things they like and one thing they're not crazy about. And so we're going to talk about, as they get older, how you can get them to keep trying new things. So because as they get older, they have more language capability, when we get to that 2 to 5 year range, here's the thing you have to know about children and eating. You can't control that. On some level, the child knows that. That's why mealtime can be so stressful. You cannot control what your child eats, but you can control the options that they have, and it's your responsibility to. You guys have probably heard the statistics on childhood obesity. That's a parent problem. I don't know how many of you saw the article that was going around by the CNN sports writer about the little girl he saw in the airport who was dressed like a tramp, and it was a very funny article. He wrote it very humorously, but at the end of it, his punchline was, "She's dressed that way because her parents bought her the clothes." It's the same thing with food. Children who choose poor eating habits do that because they have parents who have given them choices that were not healthy. And so we have to toe the line on this as parents. So as the child gets older, you're able to not just set things in front of them and hope that they eat them. You can begin to set an expectation. Okay, that's going to be the refrain. Set the expectation before you get into the situation. So you set the plate down. It has two things they like and broccoli. And you say, here is your dinner. If you eat a good dinner, you can have dessert. Okay? So the child goes, I hate broccoli. Okay, well, you have a choice. You can eat the broccoli and have dessert, or you cannot eat the broccoli and not have dessert. What is your choice? Okay, well, so what you're doing there is you are actually honoring, you're showing respect that the child does have the right to choose that, and the child is going to choose that. But you don't have to facilitate them making a bad choice by then just giving everybody dessert afterwards. So, and you notice I said if you eat a good dinner. I didn't say if you eat all your food, because something that we're starting to see is that if you tell a child that they have to eat everything on their plate, you can actually be encouraging overeating. So the problem you get into then is the child wants to negotiate with you over how much is a good meal or not, okay? Well, you're going to hear me say this phrase next week when we talk about arguing. Great line from The West Wing, we don't negotiate with terrorists, okay? Your children are going to want to negotiate with you on many things. And this is one thing where they'll be like, well, is that a good meal? Well, how about if I eat, you know, how many more bites? Has anybody gotten into this? How many more bites do I have to... I don't play the how many more bites game. I say, you know what? I think you know what a good meal is. So when you feel like you've eaten a good meal, then you can show me your plate. And if I agree with you, then you will have dessert. And if I don't, then your meal is over. Okay? Okay, Mom. Okay? And so then they're over there thinking, oh, man, I just want to eat two more bites, but I know she's going to want me to eat four. So it's perfect. You put that monkey back on their back. That's what you want to do as the parent. Make them responsible for making the right choice. Okay? So there's no negotiating. And sometimes we had one child who ate very slowly. He just could stretch dinner for miles. He may or may not be sitting here in the room right now with a big smile on his face. And so what I would do, it wasn't really his fault. I don't know. He just, there were so many things to look at and think about during dinner. And so, you know, and you'd say, eat a good meal. Well, for him, eating a good meal meant taking like an hour and a half. And the rest of us are all, we're taking baths and going to bed. So it is okay for you as a parent to say, you know what, dinner is over in 5 minutes. Okay, so I hope you can eat a good meal before then. And then the meal ends. That's okay. A hungry child can get the chow down, right? So don't worry about it. Again, you're not going to starve your child. Feel free to set the boundaries as a parent. So you are controlling something to the extent that you're able to, but you don't have to do that. You can't leave the table until you've eaten X, Y, or Z. Is that fun? No, and especially, I mean, I've had people do that at my house with a child when they're, you know, over for dinner, and it's no fun for anyone. It's incredibly awkward, and it doesn't accomplish what you want it to anyway. It just turns into a battle of wills, and the child's probably going to do a takedown on you. So you can just end the meal. Okay, so stick to your guns. Keep offering the foods that they don't like, and they will eventually try them, and they will start to eat them. But you have to be strong in the Lord. Put on the full armor of God and keep putting those foods out there for them and let them see you eat them, okay? And if they say, you know, I don't, or if they say, you always make broccoli, I hate broccoli, whatever, you can say, if you bring an ugly attitude to dinner, you may have broccoli and broccoli alone. Is that your choice? No. Then please use kind words about dinner. Thank you. Okay, so now let's talk about the store and the car. Simple. Now, no one here will ever have problems with dinner again. The store and the car. Okay, I just want to say to you that in the store, we'll talk specifically, let's talk about the car. A lot of the things that we talked about with the store last week are the same for older children. You don't, they don't ask for things. I always say, if you ask me for it, the answer is no. And that way they know. And it really killed me because at one point I knew they all wanted a puppy and not one child would ask me. And it was so, it just ate my heart out and I got the darn puppy. So I don't know if they manipulated me or not, but you can control that by just saying, if you ask me for a treat, the answer is no. And then they'll sit there and they'll be eyeballing it, but they never ask. And then you can reward that. You know, when you're done with the shopping trip, you can go, it takes a lot of self-control not to ask for all the shiny things in Walmart. I'm really proud of you guys. I'm going to give you one gumball. No, you can give them something nicer than that. Okay. So The car can be a real place for tension. Complete calm is required at all times when you're in the car. It is an enclosed area, and it is dangerous for you to flip out, okay? So children love to throw fits in the car, right? If possible, if you're having a problem like this where, say, they're arching their back and they're doing all that nastiness in the car, or they're whacking each other every time you get in the car, then before you get in the car, set the expectation. There will be no arguing in the car today, okay? Okay, Mom. If you argue, this will happen, okay? Okay, Mom. And you have the consequence set, okay, in case something happens. Then you get in the car, child throws a fit. What do? Okay. The best thing you can do, like if it's a particularly young child, like closer to that age too, is you just completely ignore the fit. We're going to talk about fits more next week when we talk about communication. But a fit is intended to get a response from you. So you just flatline. Don't give them any response. You just keep driving the car. Now, what a lot of people do, like, what do you want? What do you need? Did you drop a toy? Can I get you anything? You think texting and driving is unsafe? Try, like, contorting yourself like a yogi trying to hand your kid the juice cup they flung or whatever it is that they're flipping out over. It's not safe. You shouldn't do it. You can say, I'm sorry you're upset. When we get home, I'll help you. Or something like that. Now, if it's a drop toy, don't pick it up. If they're fighting with a sibling, like they're hurting the person next to them, that is unsafe for everyone. So you pull the car over. Pull over the side of the road. You are not in such a big hurry to get somewhere that you cannot. And I'll tell you what, they will be so stunned when you pull that car over. And you pull the car over. You don't have to yell. You don't have to do anything. You just sit there and you wait. And when the fighting stops, then you can turn around and say, if it's fighting with a sibling, you can say, when we get home, there will be this consequence for your fighting. Then you reset the expectation. There is no fighting in the car. Do you understand? Yes, Mom. Okay, I'm getting back on the road. If you start fighting again, I'm going to pull over and we'll have another consequence. Okay, so you don't let them just howl at each other. And the thing that I used to do with the kids, and I don't know why it worked, but it did, as I would say, I would like you all to sit on your hands until we get home. And everybody would have to sit on their hand, and they did it. I don't know if it was just because it was just novel and they thought it was cool, so you can try that. Throw that one out there, say it confidently, and see if it works.
And the whole throwing the fit, ignoring the fit in the car works great as you get older and you're on an airplane and you're traveling and everyone's annoyed by the screaming kid and you just sleep.
Yeah, other people's screaming kids. Yes. And you're like, that's nothing. Yes. And again, you're like, today's not my day to die. Okay, so then we come to someone else's home. Once again, you want to set the expectation before you get there. Now, someone else's home is tricky because you can't do everything in someone else's home, discipline-wise, that you can in your own home. It doesn't honor the person whose home that you're in, and it can be humiliating to your child. So you're going to set the expectation before you go. Here are a few expectations you might consider setting. We're going to respect Johnny's belongings when we're at his house. We're going to respect his toys, okay? We don't want to be destructive. We want to put things back. We're going to share with the other kids that are there, okay? Okay, Mom, talk it through. You know, these are the things we're going to do. When it's time to clean up, we're going to clean up, okay? Okay. And when Mom says 5 minutes, get ready to go. Now, this is something a lot of parents don't think to do with their children. Give your children a 5-minute warning when you're going to take them from one activity to the next. You don't like to have someone walk in and say to you, come on, let's go, it's time to go. You like to have some warning as well. That's a considerate thing to do, and you can manage their stress level by doing that. And so set the expectation before you even go to that person's house. When Mom says 5 minutes, it's time to clean up, okay? Okay, Mom. You're way more likely to have things go the way that you want them to if they've already acknowledged that expectation. Then let's say that correction is needed at someone's house. If it has to happen there, then do it in private, as we talked about last week. And if private is not possible, then wait until you get home. Even if you're not able to drive the point home as well as you could have, don't punish them. Don't administer discipline in front of other children or in front of adults. Now, there are some special circumstances for giving grace when you are at someone else's house. Okay, you know, we talked about this whole balancing law and grace. If there's ever a time to invoke grace, it's when you're on someone else's turf. Here are some reasons that you might extend grace to your child if they are not able to meet the standard when you're at someone else's house. If you have a tired child, all bets are off. Okay? And a tired child, you know, they're not equipped to respond in the way that they are when they're rested. So give them grace. If it's Christmas Eve and they've gone to a late service and then you go home and everybody wants to have dessert and they're flipping out, give them grace. Okay, if they are an overexcited child, so you're at a birthday party, they've sucked down 16 juice boxes and had a bag of Skittles, all bets are off, okay? And you might just have to motor through. And if they're doing something, again, don't let their misbehavior be a source of embarrassment to you around other parents. It's not about whether they're embarrassing you, okay? It's if they're flipping out because of something like that, you just manage it the best that you can and be sure that you aren't drawn into sin in any way and you're wanting to address the behavior. Grant grace. And then the other reason to extend grace would be if it's a special occasion or if you're at grandma's house. Grandparents do not like to see grandchildren disciplined. They may have been spankaholics like Carl when you were growing up, and then when you bring your children there and you're ready to light somebody up, it is so upsetting to them. So be aware of these things. Or if you're at a wedding and your child is flipping out, you know, carry him out the back, but don't get into a whole, you would never do that, but don't get into a big deal. If it's Thanksgiving dinner or something like that, work through it so that the people that are there have as little fallout from it as possible. And another time to extend grace is if you forgot to set the expectation before you got there. If you didn't set the expectation, then you really have kind of set that child up to have difficulty while they're there. And so just try to ask yourself, is this something that they should have known to do, or did I assume that they would know to do it? Okay, lastly, sleep time. Why is it important for us to be sure that our children are in bed when they're supposed to be in bed, not coming out a million times, all of that? Why can't we just kind of let that go however we want it to? Well, we just mentioned one key thing. You cannot expect obedience from a tired child. So bear in mind that children between the ages of 1 and 3 require 12 to 14 hours of sleep a night or a day. So some of that might be nap as well. And that a child between the ages of 3 and 5 years needs 11 to 12 hours of sleep. That's a lot of sleep. And so if they're not getting the sleep that they need, nobody wins. Mom and dad don't win. Nobody wins. So you got to set the expectation again. Stay in bed at bedtime is the expectation. So at nap, if you've got that bogey who keeps coming out and saying, is it time to come out yet? Is it time to come out yet? You say, Mom will tell you when it's time to come out. Because you came out early, now you have to stay another 5 minutes. Okay? Okay, Mom. So you can add time to nap time. And I know that's not fun. You lost your nap, and now you got to be watching the clock and everything, but you won't have to do it forever. So make sure that the child knows, if you come out, I add time. Tell them that before nap time starts, okay? Okay, Mom. Nighttime. We talked last week about how you can take Lovey away if they are having trouble coming out, and you can say, let me have your favorite object in the world, and I will bring it to you when I know that you're not coming back out of the room. In the morning, as children get older, they tend to have a habit of getting up too early and waking siblings or parents. Isn't that a drag? And so we don't like that, and we need something to keep that from happening. So when it's bedtime at night, you say, we don't wake up siblings, we don't wake up Mom and Dad. Okay? Okay, Mom. When can you come out of your room? When my clock has a 7:00. Yes. Now, if your child can't read 7:00, you can get a timer that will turn on a lamp in their room at the time that they're allowed to come out. There are all kinds of creative solutions you can have to give that child a visual of when it's okay to come out of their room. And you tell them, if you come out before the light comes on, then we're going to have a consequence. And you can decide what consequence you think is appropriate. A good consequence for waking parents or siblings is either a loss of a privilege or, oh, we all had to get up extra early this morning because of you. I'm afraid your bedtime's going to be at 6:30 tonight. Okay? And so they hate that. Kids hate when the sun's up and they're going to bed. So those are just a few ideas on that. As children get older, as we talked about, you can really lean heavily to the natural consequences and the logical consequences. For the elementary age student, I will give you just a few examples. If you have a child who isn't ready for school in the morning, you just let them know, whenever you're ready to go to school, I'll be happy to take you. And you can tell the attendance clerk why you weren't ready. Okay? Didn't do their homework? That's okay. You know what, honey? You just go tell your teacher why you didn't do your assignment, all right? Oh, but you know what? Since you have a 53 in math now, I'm afraid that you can't watch the Cosby Show after school today. So, you know, it's really easy. Oh, were you careless with a toy? Okay. Well, I guess that toy's gone. Sorry. That makes me sad, too. So bear in mind that you still need to extend grace when you can. So things like, oh, you forgot your lunch? Well, you can just eat toilet paper for lunch. No. You have to ask the question. Now, you know, the school will bail your child out with a lunch if they forget their lunch. And so they can eat the cruddy cheese sandwich. But you have to ask yourself, is my child characterized by forgetting their lunch? Or have they forgotten their lunch one time in a whole semester? A child who is not characterized by I forget things every now and then, okay? And I want people to extend grace to me when I forget things. So if your child is not characterized by forgetting something, gym clothes, whatever it is, you can extend them grace. You can bring something up to the school for them. You can show them, hey, I know that you are really great about managing your own stuff, and so I'm bailing you out today. There's nothing wrong with that. In fact, that's a good thing. That's treating someone the way that we would want to be treated.
But the expectation can't be that you will bail them out.
Yes. If the expectation is mom will bring it if I forget it, then you're dead. Okay. So again, you want to set expectations. Okay, so, you know, instead of always telling the child what to do as they get older, you want the child to recognize on their own what it is they're supposed to do. So the child comes to you and says, can I go play with Bobby? And you say, well, I don't know. Are all of your responsibilities done? And then they have to go through the list of things. And if they say, yes, my responsibilities are done, and they leave and you find out that a responsibility was not done, then when they come home, you say, you said they were done, they weren't done, we have a consequence. But the point is that you're not constantly harping on them to make things happen. You put the monkey on their back. They're the ones who are responsible for knowing what, and you have to have clearly said, you know, you can go play with a friend when your room is clean, your bathroom is clean, your homework is done, those kinds of things. And so as long as the expectation is clear, you don't have to keep repeating the expectation. You just ask them, hold them accountable to having taken it in. Okay.
All right. We'll keep moving. Questions and answers on obedience. One thing that you could do and that would help on some of these questions would be when you send them in to give us the ages of your children, because that kind of helps us set some context for where you're coming from, and hopefully we can, I mean, obviously we'll want to answer for everyone, but then we can be specific for you. So we're going to tag team some of these. Actually, this is Carl's. He's been waiting for this moment to answer the questions. All right, so the first question. My husband and I disagree on the topic of spanking. The spare the rod, spoil the child is thrown down in our conversation, and my question is spanking necessary, or should it depend on the personality of the child? And so, is spanking necessary? I think technically spanking is not necessary, but spanking is extremely effective. It's just a very effective way to get your child's attention. And so, the thing you want to be careful about is, you know, different children are going to need to be spanked different amounts. Kind of that some of that is dependent on their personality, but you want to be consistent. You want to not be spanking for a certain thing with one child and be spanking it for another child, because your kids will pick up on all that. So that's important. But it was required with all of our children. It was necessary, we'll say, with all of our children. Some more, some less. And so one thing I'd point out is that you're going to spank less in two scenarios. One, if it's very effective, because then just the threat of the spanking will help your children obey. And the other is if it's very ineffective, because if you have the child that's just, you know, spanking them harder isn't going to get them through that. You've got to come up with more creative ways, the stool or the different things, you know, work on privileges, other things that we talk about. And so the last thing I would say is just remember that age matters, and the older your child gets, you know, spanking needs to be for more and more serious things and use consequences, natural and logical consequences, as your child gets older.
I would like to address in this question the phrase, spare the rod, spoil the child. If you look in your Bibles, you will not find that phrase. And the reality is that phrase... is a poorly paraphrased version of what you do find in Scripture. And so I would like to read to you what you do find in Scripture about what it says about the rod. So Proverbs 13, verse 24. Whoever spares the rod hates his son, but he who loves him is diligent to discipline him. Proverbs 14, verse 3. By the mouth of a fool comes a rod for his back, but the lips of the wise will preserve them. Proverbs 22, verse 15. Folly is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of discipline drives it far from him. Proverbs 23, verse 13. Do not withhold discipline from a child. If you strike him with a rod, he will not die. If you strike him with a rod, you will save his soul from Sheol. Proverbs 29, verse 15. The rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child left to himself brings shame to his mother. So the question is spanking necessary? I infer from this question that you're asking, is God telling me that I've got to spank my kids? Okay, well, all of the scriptures I read to you are from Proverbs, which is a book of wisdom. So it is not a command of the Lord that you spank your child. It's not commanded. But it is spoken of again and again and again as an act of wisdom. So it is a wise thing to do. It can be implemented effectively, but it can also be implemented sinfully. So the question, is spanking necessary? Not necessarily. But it's wise. The scriptures speak to it as a wise act. And so that is for you to discern. I'm not going to stand here and tell you, you better spank your kids. But I'm also not going to stand here and tell you, oh, it's fine, don't you have to worry about it. Because it's a wise thing to do. The scriptures call it wise. So that is my response to that question.
All right. This one's yours, too.
This is mine, too. So how do you go after the heart when disciplining a stubborn child? I addressed this a little bit last week. The primary part of this question is whether or not your child is stubborn. And stubbornness is relative. It depends on your ability to persevere. It depends on your child's diligence in their defiance. So getting at the heart is the primary part of this question. So how do you go after the heart? And what I would say is, even at age two, I would begin to discuss with your child what it is that's being disciplined. Because if you don't get to the heart of the issue, because you're disciplining your child for disobedience, you're not disciplining your child for hitting, you're not disciplining your child for running when you told them to walk, you're not disciplining your child for smearing peanut butter on the walls in the hallway, you are disciplining your child for disobedience. And if you don't get to the root of what the sin is, and you only talk about the symptoms of the sin, then you are not addressing what needs to be addressed in the heart of your child. So if you want to get at the heart of a stubborn child, stop addressing the symptoms of their sin and address their sin. Their sin is they want to do what they want to do. They want to be disobedient. Mm-hmm. And that's what's being disciplined, not the symptoms. So when I ask my children, why did you just get a spanking? My children will respond, because I disobeyed. They will not respond because I hit my sister. Mm-hmm. They will not respond because I ran out of the house without making my bed. They'll tell me because I disobeyed, because that's why I'm disciplining them.
This one's yours too.
This is mine too. I'm concerned about disciplining, spanking, especially my child, especially in public. Should I be concerned about CPS taking my kids away? Should I be concerned? Certainly. Yes. The reality is, at the end of the day, the law has the authority to take children away that they feel like are not being cared for. But let me reassure you that I have had multiple conversations with multiple CPS officers who have told me that's not the way it works. If you spank your kid in Walmart, when you get home, they're not waiting for you to take your kids. Okay? If someone complains to CPS, they will come to your house. They will talk to you. It will be embarrassing. But that's okay. What I would say is to go back to the original part of why that would even come about, and that is that you're spanking your child in public. And as they've already said, and I agree wholeheartedly, that sort of discipline should be reserved for a private session. I spank my daughter in her room with her door closed where her brother cannot see. I spank my son in his room with his door closed where his sister cannot see. And if my kids are in public and they need a spanking, I just lean down and I say, no, you already know what the expectation is and you've disobeyed. And when we get home, you're getting four. So I need you to stop. And that's it. And when we get home, they get four. So I've addressed it in the moment, but I have not administered the discipline because it isn't honoring to them. Fair enough? Yeah, I start with four. What's up?
All right, this one's... You're taking this one, right?
Okay, what do you do if your child doesn't give a verbal response? Okay, Mom. Oh, you cynics? You don't think they'll do it? You're right. So... So you say to your rather young child who is shrieking in the living room, and you say, Susie, indoor voice, okay? To which Susie is supposed to say, okay, Mom. And instead she goes, or she looks away and ignores you. So what do you do at that point? Well, of course, it depends on how old the child is, okay? But when a child has the verbal skills to be able to respond and you know that they know the script to your little play and you know that it is willful disobedience that they're not responding to you, you call them on it. So let's say that you say, okay, Mom, and Susie looks away. And then you say, you need to answer Mom. Now you're going to time out. You take Susie to time out and you sit her there. You go away. You come back and you say, use an indoor voice. Okay, Susie? Susie either answers you or she doesn't. If Susie refuses to answer you again, then you say, you need some more time in time out. I'll be back in a while. And you go away. And then you come back, okay? And sooner or later, Susie's going to crack like an egg. And she's going to say, okay, Mom. Now, you can decide. I think that there are times where if it's gone on, you're seeing it happen a lot. I think it's okay to spank for that, to just say, you know what? You need to answer Mom. Kapow. And then Susie's like, where did that come from? And then she's watching you next time, and she'll be ready to answer, okay? I don't think you'll have to spank for it a gazillion times. Susie just needs to know that that's a potentiality if she decides not to respond to you. I cannot emphasize enough how important the verbal response is. That is where the child submits their will to you. So you have to want it and you have to demand it because it is good for you and it is good, good, good for the child. Okay?
Okay, Mom. This is you again. You're loaded up in this week.
Yeah. When you say discipline away from other siblings, would that apply to younger kids as well as older? Yes. And I'm done.
All right. Well, we'll give you one more.
How do you get to first-time obedience without spanking every single minute of the day? Not that we do. I'm just saying. I have not looked you up yet, but whoever you are, I love that question. So how do you get to first time obedience without spanking every minute of the day? The first thing I would say is it's conceivable that you may spend a day spanking. I did. When my son turned 2 and I recognized I have not been doing this well. And my wife and I came together and we spent hours talking and praying and seeking the Lord and reading and studying and praying more and talking more. We realized we have been giving chances. We have been giving opportunity after opportunity after opportunity to be disobedient and allowing it. And so we sat our son down and we said, when you disobey, you'll get a spanking. Every time. Starting tomorrow morning. So go to bed. And the next day, I probably gave my son 30 or 40 spankings. And it was horrible. The second day, I gave him like 3 spankings. And the third day, none. So how do you do it without spanking every single minute of the day? Maybe you won't. Maybe you will. But here's what I'll say. First time obedience is something that you have to set an expectation for and then demand that expectation be met. And yes, disciplining is painful. Not just for them. It's not just their rear ends that are painful if you're spanking. It hurts. It hurts. There is pain and consequence associated with sin, and not just for the sinner. And so you have to recognize that that is the reality and walk in it. So every single minute of the day, that's a slight exaggeration. But for me, genuinely, for one day, it was almost reality. But I would encourage you to be aware that you are not looking for disciples of me. Don't try to raise your children to be disciples of you. If you're going to spend all day spanking and try to set this expectation and have them meet it, you better be pointing them to the one they should be a disciple of. Don't waste that whole day spanking your kids without explaining to them what you're doing. When you disobey me, you are disobeying the one who made you. When I discipline you, I am obeying the one who made me. So for you to obey God is to obey me. For me to obey God is to discipline you. And so you've disobeyed, and now I'm going to be obedient. I'm going to demonstrate obedience to you. The Lord has called me to discipline you, and that's what we're about to do. And then 15 minutes later, you're having the conversation again. And 10 minutes later, you're having the conversation again. And it feels like a beat down, and it feels like you're not getting anything accomplished, and you're wondering, is this even working? Yes. Yes is the answer. It's working. Be diligent. Persevere. The Lord is faithful. And you are called to make disciples in your home, not good little kids, and not disciples of you, but disciples of Jesus Christ. Fair enough?
I would add to what Carl just said. If you have that day where you're having to spank a lot, just keep in mind, and Carl touched on this, it's not about hitting harder as the day goes on or raising your voice louder than you did. Those things, you need to stay level through that day, okay? The biggest thing in your favor is not how strong your arm is or how scary your face is or how loud your voice is. In fact, I would say those things can work against you. The biggest thing in your favor is consistency. Be consistent to do what is next. But don't let it escalate, if that makes sense to you. Okay.
All right, this one's you.
Oh, okay. You mentioned parenting in the short term versus the long term. The example given was putting a video on before starting dinner. Can you give other examples of how we do this? I want to parent with my children's best interest in mind and not my own and still keep the peace in our house. Yes, I can give you some more examples of how we do this. We tend to parent for the short term anytime we are looking for conflict avoidance. Okay, so an example would be you buy them the toy to keep them quiet in the store. Another example would be you serve mac and cheese for the first 6 years of their life to keep them from complaining or refusing to eat. Another example would be you let them sleep with you all night long to avoid having to keep putting them back in their bed over and over again. So these are just a few. I mean, I'm sure you're starting to think in your head of other ways that we do this. Anytime that we are trying to avoid conflict by just satisfying whatever the child's demand is rather than training them to want something better than they want on their own. Did you have something you wanted to add to this?
Well, you covered, I was going to bring up again the whole mitigating circumstances thing. Mm-hmm. We kind of talked about that, about being tired or overexcited or it being a special occasion or you not having set the expectation. Those are kind of mitigating circumstances for some of those things.
Or if you're in the store with grandma and your child's flipping out and grandma's like, give sweetie a candy bar. You go, great, grandma, let's give sweetie a candy bar. You know, you just manage. There are times when you can manage conflict, but if that's your go-to, that's not good. You don't want to be characterized by those decisions, okay? And so they're going to, like I said, there are times when you need the video in there and you need the child looking at the video. But if that is what you're going to do every time you're in a particular situation, then you probably need to ask, is there some conflict that I'm trying to avoid here by this behavior? And if your child is under two, let me just throw this out there. Are you guys all aware of how much screen time is recommended for children two and under by the American Academy of Pediatricians? Zero. Screen time includes looking at your iPhone, just for the record. It's not good. Okay?
So the last piece there is just, you know, what do you do in those situations? Come up with special activities. So maybe you're making a dinner and instead of putting the video on, you
put out some pots and pans and they pretend to cook with you. I mean, get creative. Maybe they have room time was something we used where there was just a certain time of day when everybody in the house goes and plays in their room. And that's just what we do.
And it takes some training to get them to that point. But the point is you're teaching them skills to be able to entertain themselves while you need to be doing something else. You're allowed to need to be doing something else. But you can either facilitate your children, you know, being able to let you do that, or you can just sort of entertain instead of train. Okay? And so, be creative about, you know, they can be doing something alongside of you, or again, set the expectation. Mom needs to make dinner. You can sit and paint, okay? I don't want to paint. I want to be in your face. You have a choice. You can paint, or you can go sit in your room. Which would you like to do? I think I'll paint. That's a good choice. I affirm your choice, okay? So you can kind of manage those things. Again, you're setting the expectation. If the child doesn't like the expectation you set, you say, you have a choice. It's not really a choice. You give them, here's the positive thing I said you can do, or you can go be very lonely. Which would you like? Okay? And then they don't want to look like an idiot, and they want to do the thing that's better, and so they choose well, and you affirm their choice. Okay.
All right. Okay, before we move into the next sediment, that's the last question.
Yep.
Okay. Before we move into the next material, I just want to make a quick announcement for those of you who weren't here the first week. I had a little flyer at the back that had some information for you that is no longer back there. I didn't print anymore. So I'm going to give you two pieces of information that if you do not already have, you can write down. And these are ways that you can ask us questions. The first one is a telephone number that you can text. And that number is 972-372-4961. 972-372-4961. And you can also email me at cbrower, that's C-B-R-O-W-E-R, at thevillagechurch.net. And our intention is to answer every single question that comes in, either from here or one of us will email you or call you directly. So if you have any questions, please feel free to send those in.
Yep. So some of them we've saved because they fit with a certain week, so we'll get to it then, or you'll get an email if you've asked one and we haven't answered it yet. Okay, we've got a motor on through here. Mm-hmm. So shared expectations. We're still in the first thing we share. We share expectations. And so why are responsibilities an expectation? And so the expectation is that the members of the family will contribute to it. And so there are responsibilities that every member of the family has, and that's an expectation. And so when we talk about, we've talked about obedience. Obedience sets the boundaries for how do we work together in our community. So this, if I'm within the boundaries, then everything's hunky-dory and I'm good. So that's about obedience. And then once I'm in the boundaries of my family, then what is my role as a person, as a parent, as a child? What's my role in the family and how does the family operate? So that's why we address responsibilities within our community. So,
we're on
again,
page 9.
Okay. Begin with the end in mind, right? You knew that where that was going. You all had it all filled in already. This is a great week to be thinking about this. You'll see lots of things where we're going to bypass what's easy today to get to what's easy in 10 years. I'm going to bypass the thing that's easy now to get to what's easy in 10 years. And so when my children are adolescents, what do I want them to be responsible for? So let's talk about a little bit about what that looks like in our house. So again, our kids are 15, 14, 13, and 11. And so our kids are responsible for the trash, mowing the yard, doing their own laundry, cleaning the whole upstairs, including their rooms and their bathrooms. They're responsible for their own homework. They manage their own homework, and if it gets done, they get a good grade, and if it doesn't, they don't. They manage their own lunches. They get a budget for lunch, and they spend that wisely over the month, or they make their lunch, and they're responsible for getting to school with a lunch. When they go to camp or they go on a trip, they pack all their clothes, and they figure out what goes in and what they need for the trip. They interface with their teachers. They use their own money to buy each other birthday and Christmas gifts. They write their own thank you notes. They feed the pets. And they're responsible for waking themselves up in the morning.
So that's a lot of things. Jennifer's like, you need examples. I'm like, no, man, I got it. So, you know, obviously they didn't start out doing that. We've worked to that. And so we've made decisions, and you know, when they were small in the short term, to get to this long-term list. And so what we want to do is we want to foster independence with our children. And so this sounds kind of counterintuitive. We're in community. We're all interdependent. There's this interdependence that goes on. But everybody has their own role in the family. And so when we make children responsible for things within the family and they see how it interacts with the other person, then it builds confidence in their ability to contribute and participate in the family. And so they know that I'm responsible for myself and my things, and I contribute to our family. If we're not fostering independence, we're fostering dependence. And so we, you know, Matt talks about this delayed adolescence and kids who don't leave home and play video games all the time, or, you know, that's the kind of behavior where somebody can't leave and function as a in some other community because they've never had responsibilities of their own, and so they don't feel safe to leave the community that they're dependent on. And so, yeah.
Okay, so when you heard the list of all the things that my children are responsible for, were you sitting there thinking, what the heck does she do all the time? I hope you were a little bit, because what the question that I had to ask myself as the children were growing up was, should I be doing this? Not can I do this, but should I be doing this? Just because mom can doesn't mean she should. And this is a little something that I like to call intentional laziness. Intentional laziness, you are looking for the thing that it is good and right for you to hand off to the child. There are times where I am sitting on the couch drinking coffee and my kids are running around with a toilet brush in one hand and a stack of laundry in the other because my laundry's done and my toilets are clean, okay? And so intentional laziness means that I'm looking for what it's time to give away to that child. And even so even though I am able to do it, I choose not to do it. But why do we do it all? We're going to talk to the moms first because I think it's probably a little worse for the moms. You have got to hold still. Okay.
Okay, mom.
Look at mom. Okay, that's not creepy. Okay, so why do we do it all? I think there are several reasons. The first reason that moms try to do it all is guilt. We try to do it all because of guilt. I should do it. I'm the mom. Now, this is equally terrible for the stay-at-home mom as it is for the working mom. The stay-at-home mom is like, I used to do all kinds of awesome things, and I don't do them anymore, and so I ought to at least be able to keep the house clean and blah, 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 and, you know, do all the laundry. I've got the time, Lord knows, you know, if the kids would just take naps and whatever. But the truth is, it's very hard to do it all, right? Even if you have that whole day. Well, then let's flip over to the working mom. Guilt can hit her too. She feels like she should do it during the time that she's home, because otherwise, is she really even the mom? I mean, isn't this what moms do? Moms make the lunches for the kids until they're 16 years old. Moms, you know, fold their underwear in little heart shapes and put them all in the drawer. Shouldn't I do those things? That's who I am, okay? And so we define our role as mom by the things that we do or don't do around the house. And so guilt is a big deal. Another reason that we try to do it all is because of a need for validation. When I do whatever it is that I do, I feel needed by my family. When I do those things, I feel connected to my family. And so do you hear what's wrong there? Is we're making this chore thing all about us. I can prove to you that I love you by doing all of these things for you. And so this is how some of the women in this room may have ended up marrying the guy who had never done his laundry, you know, because his mom loved him so much and wanted to show that love for him that she did laundry for him all the way until he graduated from college and he doesn't know how to do the laundry. So don't make it about you. Now, the two things that we've just looked at, the guilt and the need for the validation, these are particularly issues for the yes mom. right? The yes mom is the one who craves relationship, and so she's not heavy on bringing the rules in. And because she craves relationship more than she craves order, she's willing to try to do it all herself so that you will love her, so that she doesn't have to feel guilty, so that she can feel validated. It hits all of us, but I think it hits the yes mom a little harder. But there's a third reason that we try to do it all, and this hits the no mom, and that is our need for control. The need for control. The no mom, she's all about controlling her world. And so what this means is that I don't hand off things to the children for a couple of reasons. Either because of quality control, I can do it better myself, or because of time management, I can do it faster myself. Okay, so an example would be the laundry. When you first start asking those sweet little chipmunks to fold their own laundry, it's not folded. And even if they follow your perfect instructions on how to get everything just razor sharp, they're going to carry it upstairs and they're just going to open their drawer and shove it all in there in these little wadded up balls. And some moms who are a little more controlling than others cannot live knowing that those drawers are jam-packed full of things that some child took up there and wadded in there. So I want to do it better myself, or I want to do it faster myself, so I withhold handing off responsibilities to my children. Moms, we gotta let that stuff go. It is good for your children to do these things themselves. You have to understand household chores should be a safe place to fail for your child. And let me tell you what this is like. Think about when your child first started bringing home artwork from church or from preschool, and it was the scribble, and what did you say? Oh, that's beautiful. What is it? Of course it's a cow. It looks just like a cow. And then you hung it on the refrigerator. It did not look anything like a cow. Okay? The first time that your child helps you mow the front yard, it will not look like the lawn service came. Oh, sorry. The first time that your child helps you by putting their dish in the dishwasher, they may drop it. It may smash. You can't flip out on them. You gotta go, you know what? That's okay. I appreciate you were trying to help mom. Next time, hold it with two hands, okay? And so you direct them, you help them to learn, you're prepared for them to not always do it correctly. You need to be prepared for them to not do it the way that you would do it. And occasionally you can bless them by doing it for them, but you need to be characterized by what can I hand off? Intentional laziness. Dad?
All right. Just because dad can doesn't mean he should. So I have my kids pay the mortgage. Wouldn't that be
great?
If only.
Next year.
No, so it's all the same things. And I think that with dads, there's fewer things to hand off. You know, I think of home maintenance type things. I mean, mowing the yard, obviously, that's one that makes sense. And so like Jennifer said, when we first started having the kids mow the yard, I had to remow most of it. You know, it's just one of those things. But now, you know, they get in there, all four of them split it up, and the yard's mowed in like 10 minutes. But there's a funny story along that line. We first moved up here, and everybody on our street just about has a yard service. I mean, it's Flower Mound. It's where we live. And so the kids are out mowing the yard. It's the summer or whatever. And one of them, who may or may not be here, Mary Kate, comes around the corner.
She's 10
at
the time.
Yeah, she's 10 at the time. And she runs over the newspaper. And if you ever run over a newspaper with a lawnmower, but it's just a huge poof of papers everywhere. And so we clean it up and we laugh about it, the whole thing. And the neighbor stops me or Jennifer a couple days later. Oh, I saw your yard lady mowing your yard, and she totally ran over the newspaper. I'm like, my yard lady? It's my daughter. No, so...
Well, she really is our yard lady, really. And this guy had three kids, you know? I mean, I was like, dude, you got a whole yard service sitting at the breakfast table with you, and you're paying somebody? You're crazy.
So, you know, with dad, especially, you know, with the yard or home maintenance or whatever, you know, the quality control and time management are big ones. You know, there's all kinds of things I can do way faster, like mowing the yard. You know, it just slows me down to teach them how to mow the yard.
I don't want to be doing it. Or fixing stuff around the house. It's the same thing. It may not be exactly the way we wanted it. Or, you know, I don't know if you're the car guy or whatever. But the idea here is that for dads, there's lots of opportunities to train your children by having them come alongside of you, get their hands dirty, try it out. It's great. I mean, I can't tell you how many conversations. I think we ended up talking about sex while we were, like, turning soil over in the garden. You know, it's one of those. It's just because there was an opportunity and something came up and I took advantage of the conversation. So there's lots of other good things that happen there. The other point here is just because we can pay someone to do it doesn't mean that we should. And so we're going to practice intentional cheapness. And so that's the lawn. Maybe it's painting a room or painting the house, getting your car washed, washing your windows. I mean, these are all things you can do with your children. And you can use them as money management lessons. You can say, well, we'd pay $20 to have someone mow the yard. Let's take $10 and put it in the jar here every time we mow the yard together. And then they can see how much money that costs. And then you can say, well, we've saved all this money. Let's go to Six Flags or something, you know. And so you can use it as a saving technique with dad, right? So, you know, the point here is just because it's easier for us doesn't mean it's the best decision. And so we don't want to sacrifice doing what's easy today. We want to focus on what's going to be easy later. Okay, so keeping it real. We don't want to just trick our children into thinking they're contributing to the family. Make up some tasks for them to do that, and they feel like they contribute. We want it to be real. And so children must see and believe that their contributions to the family are real and necessary. So like I've said, you know, it's not what's easier now. It's going to be what's easier in the long run. And you know what? What ends up happening is that your children end up doing the responsibilities out of joy and gratitude, not out of, you know, what were the words?
Grudging obedience. Out of fear.
And so they start to see how their contribution to the family brings joy to their siblings, brings joy to their parents, how it makes life in the family easier. And so the kids have a weekly ritual where they clean their rooms and the whole upstairs on the weekend. Well, I'm not exactly sure when that ritual happens. It happens usually when I'm not around or I'm off somewhere. And so they're up there, they're doing their thing. And so Jennifer's out of town, and she comes home and goes upstairs, and the whole upstairs has been cleaned. The kids did all of that without me even being in the loop. They just knew that it was Sunday, and Mom was coming home, and so let's get our room cleaned up. And they got the whole, and so she wasn't there saying, hey, you guys need to do this. They just did it because they knew that Mom would come home. She'd be tired. She'd be excited. So that was great. We loved that. And so, let's see. We've talked about these. So their confidence is going to grow. So confidence and perceived value to the family go way up. As we were going through the notes, I think Mary Kate said, she said this exact thing. She's like, you just like to know that what you're doing is important.
One of the things that started kind of early, I actually had taken a part-time job when the kids were really little, something that just had kind of fallen into my lap, and I genuinely needed their help with the housework. I genuinely couldn't do it all, and that was when I started handing things off, and one of the things that I handed off was the making of the lunches. We'll have a list in a little bit. It'll show you. They can start doing that really early. They thought they would go to school and all these other kids had these lunches that moms had put together for them. And for a long time, I still wrote a napkin for them, you know, like they would do all the work and then I'd put the napkin in when they were walking out the door. But they would come home and just say, Mom, you know, so-and-so is, he's in the fourth grade. He doesn't know how to even make a sandwich for himself. And he's always complaining about what his mom put in there. They loved it because they could control what went into the lunch. Now, I really was controlling a lot of it because I only purchased things that I thought were suitable to go in the lunch. But they loved that they could pick and choose. Do I want the carrots or the sugar snap peas, you know? And so for them, it was fun to have those choices, and they knew that it was good for our family. They knew that when they packed their lunches, it saved money. Like, it was good for them to learn about money and budgeting when they knew, okay, I get $25 a month to spend in the school cafeteria. That will buy me 3 nutty bars and some French fries, and then I'm out for the whole month. And so they knew, okay, then I have to keep packing. It has been so great to see how excited they get about things like that and realizing I'm contributing to the family. We might get to go out to eat this month one time because we didn't spend money on X, Y, or Z because I did it myself, those kinds of things.
Yeah, Jennifer's gotten the intentional laziness down to an art where where on a school day, she starts to participate at the very last possible moment when she's required to, and that really means someone needs to drive. And so up until the point that someone's getting in the car, Jennifer doesn't participate in the mornings. They get up, they finish any homework, they get dressed, they make their lunches, they're ready at the time, and Jennifer gets in the car and drives, the one of them that still goes to school. So I don't know what you're going to do next year.
I make coffee for Mary Kate. What a good mom am I, huh? 14-year-old drinking coffee? Woo!
So, genuine life skills are learned. Genuine life skills are learned. So we talked about in the first week about parenting selfishly or unselfishly, and this is an unselfish way to parent. Your child is going to grow up and leave the house, and they're going to be a roommate. They're going to be a wife or a husband. They're going to be a son-in-law or a daughter-in-law. They're going to be a mom and a dad. What a gift you can give to those people in their lives by training your child to have life skills, to be able to do things for themselves, be responsible, and contribute to a community. So the last point here is your child can't count on having your income level as an adult. This may be the first generation where they say this. And so if your child doesn't know how to do laundry, doesn't know how to mow a yard, doesn't know how to change the oil in his car, he's going to have to spend money and budget for things, or she, that they may not be able to afford. So set your child up to succeed regardless of what their income level is. All right.
I know a lot of people in our community can afford a housekeeper, and I think that one of the great ironies of my life is that when I can finally afford one, I probably won't need one anymore. But I think it's great to have a housekeeper, but you might want to consider if your children are ever having a time when they're getting involved in those kind of activities. Is there some role that they take in doing those things? And so be thinking about that. Like, even if it's with the yard, look for, you know, I'm not saying you have to cancel the yard service and get rid of the housekeeper, but you might have to be more deliberate about finding ways for your children to take on some of those responsibilities in case they grow up to be someone who can't have a maid or who can't have a yard service.
Okay. Cultivating responsibility.
Okay, so we gave you a handout tonight, and it's labeled age-appropriate chores, and you'll notice that there's a source, a website listed underneath there, familyroi.org. I came across this last summer when I was putting together the material for this class, and interestingly enough, it's a secular website. It's not put together by a pack of Christians who just want to raise a small militia out in the middle of the country. This is actually a website that is it's for working moms. And so often I think the working mom is better about delegating responsibility because she needs to, maybe more than the stay-at-home mom who feels like, well, it's kind of all my job, I should be doing it. So I was really interested to read this list because I thought, no one's going to be as aggressive about this as I'm going to want them to be for this parenting class. I really wanted parents to be kind of pushed beyond their comfort level on when can I start doing things with my kids. But interestingly enough, and this list actually was put together with the help of child development specialists. It wasn't just like someone's idea of what would be good. It was children are developmentally able to handle these types of responsibilities at these ages. So you can check out the website if you want to. I basically pulled it straight off of there. But look at some of the things that are on this list. They have things for the 9 to 24 month set, okay? They can help you with cleaning table and counter surfaces with an adult, okay? They can help clean the yard. They can do simple errands. Bring the diaper, please. Throw this in the trash, please. They can help make beds. They can help with grocery shopping, okay? So you remember we talked about the store is a really hard thing for those little kids. Let them be a part of it. Can you put this in the cart? Can you hand this to the lady? And then they're getting to touch things and hold things, but it's not things that are going to end up in the bottom of the toy bin or the trash later. Water the plants. I read this and I cracked up. I'm thinking they're meaning outdoor plants, but you know what? Knock yourself out. So then 2 years and up. There's a bunch of things here. Things that jump out at me as creative are, and 2 years and up means from age 2 to 3. Dust with socks on their hands. We did this one time where the kids all put socks on and were scooting around on my floors cleaning them. That was kind of fun. A little further down, you'll see that by the time they are 2 years old, they're able to start sorting laundry. Okay, so you can hand the child clothes to put into the appropriate piles. They can wipe up their own spills between ages 2 and 3. You're not the cleanup crew. And it doesn't have to be a punishment, okay? It's if they spill something, you go, oh, run, go get the rag. And then they can wipe it up. And then they see, oh, see, when I knock my drink over, it creates work. That's a reality, okay? And then they help clean it up, and it helps them to make the connection. It helps them to be more careful without you saying, you need to be more careful with your cup. Okay, 3 years and up, fix bowl of cereal, okay? So that child who likes to wake up at 5:30 in the morning and mommy, feed me, be like, dude, the cereal is on a shelf where you can reach it. So when you're hungry, go fix your bowl of cereal. You may come out and find milk everywhere, but sooner or later, they're going to figure out how to do. You may have to put the milk into a container that's easier for them to pour. You may have to put things down where they can reach them so that it's their ability to do it instead of you. So you can read through these on your own time. I think you will be surprised at how early some of these things can start with your children. They had, interestingly, I noticed on here, on the 8 to 10 year age range is where they said that a child can pack their own suitcase. They can actually do that younger if you apply a little bit of creativity to it. What I used to do is print out a packing list for each child, and so it would say socks, and then depending on how long we were going to be gone, so we were going to be gone for 5 days, I would have 5 little blanks, and so every time they put a pair of socks into the bag, they checked off a blank. Okay, and so, you know, it would say shoes, church clothes, whatever was supposed to be there, and there were the number of checks that they needed to make for the items. And for the children who could not yet read, I did clip art. And so I would put a picture of socks, and then there would be 5 blanks. And so then that child would go and put the socks in. It was the coolest thing for them to get to pack their own bags. And then I would double check them. You know, initially I would say, bring me your list and let's go see if everything's in there. And if it was in there, there might be a reward, or the reward might just be my unbridled happiness that they had done it well. And then as they got older, I stopped double checking the lists for them. And so we had times where we went to the beach and someone did not bring a swimsuit. Okay, so what do? Let's go to Walmart and you can buy yourself a suit. But I don't want to spend my money on a swimsuit. That's sad. Do you want to swim naked or would you like to go buy yourself a suit? So that's actually not an option for those of you who are not familiar with beach rules. Okay, so the point being, and there were times where we have one child who always only brings one pair of shoes when we go somewhere and the shoes get wet or something, you know, or they're the wrong shoes, and has just recently realized that he really needs to bring more than one pair of shoes, but he's learning that on his own, natural consequences. But at the same time, he gets to have all of the satisfaction of knowing that he has taken responsibility for his own bag and then for what didn't go into the bag as well. So that is, you might want to look through this list and really ask yourself, am I giving away everything that I can to this child at the age appropriate level? And it's hard. It takes a lot of repetition on your part to get them to faithfully complete the tasks that you have put out there for them. And you have to have the consequences ready before you give them the expectation of what it is that you want them to be responsible for. Have in mind what the consequence will be if it's not done. I don't think you have to say, hey, you're responsible for feeding the pets, and if you don't, your life is going to be miserable. But you need to be ready for if the pets don't get fed to say, you know what, since you didn't feed the pets, now you need to dust some blinds for me. There's always something else that needs to be done in the house. We have 52 windows in our house. 52, because the Lord is kind, divides neatly by 4. And so I can always have children go dust blinds if I need them to. There's always something that you're not just giving them a consequence to pay, you know, to make them feel like they have failed. You're giving them a consequence which is still adding to the overall success of the family. Hey, I've got more stuff that needs to be done. These are things I normally do, but I'll be happy to hand them off to you in addition to your responsibilities that you didn't complete. that kind of thing. Because then they appreciate that you're the one who normally does that and that they don't usually have to do it. So.
Yeah, and so this 8 to 10 on mowing the yard, it's they sneak it in for dads. It says learn how to use the tools, and then they says they can have a summer job mowing the yard. So I'm like, well, if they can get a summer job mowing the yard, they can mow my yard. So our kids started in the second grade mowing the yard with the self-propelled mower. It's frustrating until like fifth grade if they have to use the push mower. So that's just my experience with dads.
Riding mower? Oh my gosh, I'd mow the yard if we had one of those.
Really?
No. Not
really. I bet the kids and I could all pitch in and get you a riding mower. Okay, so we've talked about those things. Schoolwork. Schoolwork is one of those places where there are lots of natural consequences built in. Your kids are in school for, 13 years before they go off to college. Really, the last four are the ones that have to really be good, if they're going to go to college. And so they have a lot of time in there to learn how to be a student. And so as a parent, take advantage of that time. And so even if you're a homeschooler, let the natural consequences of assignments missed, assignments forgot, work not done correctly, let those things, use those as teaching moments, and let the process help your kids. So, in school, they get a lot of aids for doing, they get a million checklists and planners and all those kinds of things, and those things are all really useful. I mean, we have the one story was Matt was like in the seventh or eighth grade when the teacher made him call home.
Oh, she made him call from in front of his entire class. He had to call me and tell me that he had worked on this paper. It was fantastic for seventh grade, and it was a major grade, and the day that it was due, he forgot to bring it in. And he's not someone who's characterized by that kind
of
thing. He went through periods where he was, but at that point he really wasn't, but not after this day. The teacher made him call me in front of the entire class and leave me a message saying that he had forgotten his paper. And here's the message that was on my machine when I got home. Mom, this is Matt. I'm calling you because I left my major paper at home, and I know that the consequence for leaving it there is that I will receive a late grade, and I know you're not bringing it up, but the teacher wanted me to call you. He totally knew it was his responsibility, and I sat there. I was glad I missed the call, because I would have sat there wanting to take that paper up really badly for a child who isn't characterized by forgetting things. But he has not turned in a single thing late again. He hasn't. It's his responsibility. And he knew it was his responsibility even when I wanted to swoop in and give grace.
Yeah. Okay.
Good job, Matt.
Okay, stewardship of money. We talked a little bit about this. And wants versus needs. We'll just talk about allowance a little bit. There's a million different ways to give allowance. I'll just kind of give you the way we did it. I was really careful to separate allowance from just normal responsibilities as being a part of the family. So all the things we've talked about is not why they get their allowance. They get their allowance because... Why did they get allowance?
Because we know there are going to be incidental expenses, things that are wants and not needs. They're allowed to have discretionary money for those things. We don't want to always be making the decision between whether to buy a want or not. Mm-hmm. An example that we were thinking of is like the yearbook at school. I personally am not going to fund a yearbook. They do them now in elementary school. I don't know if you're aware of that. And so I'm not going to, at one point I had, for 3 years, I had four children at the same elementary school. I'm not going to buy each child a yearbook every year. But if a child really wanted to have a yearbook, then they could have their own funds to put toward that if they wanted to. So allowance for us is for things like that. Or if you want a snack when we're at the football game, or if you want a soft drink when we're at the restaurant, that's great. That's $2. I'll bill you when we get home.
Or if you want the really fancy pair of shoes instead of just the normal, we'll fund the shoes to this point. Mm-hmm. This is your need. If you want the want, then you can contribute some of your money.
I can get you a sweet pair of Wranglers for $15. And if you want the Jordache, then you're going to need to kick in 25 more. I don't even know if they have Jordache anymore.
One thing that's been really useful for keeping track of that kind of stuff is we keep a ledger in the drawer. And so the kids borrow $2 for something, and if they don't have cash on it, you know, they have bank accounts and things, they can write in the ledger, and then like once a week we just settle up the ledger, and that makes it makes it pretty easy. So that's just something that we've done. And so obviously then you're going to teach them to save. You can teach them to tithe. I mean, use the allowance for those types of things, differentiating between wants and needs. I mean, your children have different personalities. We have some of them who are rich because they don't spend their money on anything. And then the other ones are always scraping pennies out of stuff because there's something else that they want. And so they're able to just kind of understand money and build their own personality and how they're going to manage it at a time when it's safe. You know, if they get overdrawn in the ledger, you know, we can have a conversation about that. Well, you don't have any more money. Mm-hmm. We can't put anything else in the ledger. Well, that's a better lesson to learn when you're 12 than it is when you're 25. So, anything else there?
So basically the point, the way that we approached it was that we aren't going to pay you to do things that we just do as members of the family. So I don't get paid to do the dishes. I don't get paid to do the laundry. You know, that's just a part of my being a part of the family. But there are things that we will pay you to do. So things that we might pay a professional to do, we might pay you to do. So there was one summer where I paid Matt by the window to go around and clean all the dead bug bodies out and clean all of the, you know, and he did a fantastic job with it. And then he got to where he'd earned enough money doing the windows that he decided he would rather earn screen time. And so for however many windows he cleaned, he earned an additional 5 minutes of screen time on the computer. And then, wow, did my windows get cleaned fast. So you can be creative about how you do it. But at least there are differing opinions and differing approaches on how to teach children about managing money. We're just giving you our approach. We just really wanted that they would know we'll cover your needs. We know that you have wants. You can decide how to approach wants on your own. We will not be paying you to do things that are just a part of being a member of our family and making the household run.
Yeah, because we didn't want the negotiation to happen. Well, you know, if you're going to ask me to do another chore as I'm able to do more responsibilities, now you owe me more money.
Yeah.
You know, and so we wanted to disconnect this. And so we don't really, I mean, we use other responsibilities. So they don't clean their bathrooms. Well, they get to clean their bathrooms and do something else. We wouldn't withhold the allowance.
Yeah.
Because the allowance then connects it, like I'm paying you to clean the bathroom. If you don't clean the bathroom, you don't get the money. And so that's just the way it's worked for us. I mean, different people manage it different ways. So that's just our opinion on that.
Okay. So next week, I just tell you right now, next week's my favorite week. We're going to talk about shared language. It's going to be how to talk to your children in and out of conflict. How to build a culture of conversation in your home. Everybody always wants to know, how do I talk to my children about sex? We'll be talking about that a little bit next week, about how you get to a place where those conversations are easy and open. So that'll be what we'll pick up with.
Thank you for listening to audio from the Village Church, located in Texas. Feel free to make copies of this message to give to others, but please do not charge for those copies or alter the content in any way without permission. For more information about the Village Church, please visit us online at www.thevillagechurch.net.